Alan Crane Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240 for Autumn Semester 2022.
Today, component cost of capital. This is a mathy kind of lecture, so make sure you write down the little formulas, and then on Wednesday, I'll do this it again, just step by step, so that, and then the next quiz will have these kinds of questions on it. And I'll make sure that you have enough time that you can nail that quiz, because these are those math questions that traditionally are the low scores for an exam, but we'll make sure that doesn't happen like we did on the last one. But first, a look at the happy, unhappy numbers. And here we go. It was started out back and forth on the bull. The bears kept kind of giving ground to the bulls early on. But then there at the end, it was just, it's turning into a bloodbath at the end there. There's a steep drop off here in the last hour of trading. I'm hoping that turns around. Now, as a side comment, Twitter can kiss my backside. Why is the price zero? Because he of the cloven hoof took it private, so that if you had stock in it, there's what's happening right now to the stock price. If you had derivatives, which is where I invest, he zeroed those out. I lost everything on a play. It doesn't exist anymore. The stock doesn't really exist. So the bets on that stock, the call options, put options, they don't exist anymore. So I lost my initial investment, and I was up over $1,000. I lost that too, just in the blink of an eye. The stock market can be a vicious animal, and those who are the nastiest participants can do some pretty awful things to people who are just trying to make an extra little bit of money for their miserable retirements. Yeah, there you go. But anyway, let me not go on about that anymore. But if you're looking, interestingly, going to another one, a competitor of Twitter, a comparison to Twitter is Meta, Facebook. So how did its competitor fare today as Twitter disappeared from the investment landscape? It took a butt bath too. Isn't that interesting? And Twitter is a risky company. Can you see that? Although actually the PE ratio is low, the beta is telling you that's a risky company. It slid on Twitter vanishing from the landscape. Now that seems a little bit odd when one of your investments, if you are into social media investments, would turn south like that, at the same time that its competitor vanishes from the investment landscape. Now, the markets are very difficult to read sometimes, and it's never going to be one of those things where you have an exact science if you are working day to day and trading the way I do, or the way some of you probably would. But yeah, it's an interesting little situation arising there. But anyway, going back to the main markets here, and did I mention that Elon Musk is an abomination hated by God? Well, he is. But anyway, as you can see, equities are down, and there's still some trading level left. I smell a rally in the last few minutes. I don't know, but it looks to me like there's going to be a turnaround, and the bulls are going to try to grab some bargains here at the end. Not sure, though, if the bulls have enough strength. I walked around with my bull head on and collected candy this afternoon, but I don't know if that's going to be reflected in the market right now. Crude oil has slid. It's still in that band that I was telling you about, that 82 to 89. It just loves itself that area right there, and it's just staying there. And the gasoline prices are fairly stable. They seem to have slid just a little bit, but over here, gold and silver took a bath too. And here's the interesting thing. Bond yields spiked up, and that was because the Fed says it's going to do another discount rate increase, which means the prices were falling, so investors are getting out of bonds. They're certainly not grabbing gold or silver, and they're getting out of equities. All of that points to the investors are moving their money back to cash to see what happens next. So we're in definitely a wait and see kind of situation right now. The positive news is that the numbers are telling us that the economy is actually pretty strong right now. Positive GDP, a pretty decent 2.6 uptick in the quarterly GDP. And the only problem still is inflation, and that's just going to take strangling the money supply, raising interest rates to get that under control. And that'll be a months-long process. It will work, but it's going to take a while. So going over here, Tokyo had a nice up day, just one of those solid, just growing strongly. And when the sun set there, the London woke up and it had a decent upsurge, although there at the end it kind of tailed off some. But there's fairly bullish sentiment in London right now from what I'm hearing. They're happy that so far, they're comfortable with this new prime minister that was just replaced the last one, who lasted 6 weeks. And so London is in a fairly good mood. We, on the other hand, are not in a very good mood at all. Like I said, I'm going to show you this near the end. I just have a feeling that the bulls are about to make a run here at the end. See, when the market goes down like that, but the fundamentals are still strong, that's when you do some, what we call the bargain hunting. And I've used this term before. There's some bargain hunters. Stock prices have gone down. Maybe we should buy some while the buying is cheap right now. Who knows, though? All of that having been said, I'm trying to look at someone here. You, madam, and you. You look like the next Elon Musk. Except your hair is much better than his. Really, that whole hairdo where you shave the sides of your head and get a perm on top, that's weird. Okay. But, okay. One of the things that we need to know is what the value of a company is. But internally to a company, there is this driving interest in knowing what it costs us to run our company. And I'm not talking about accounting costs. You, madam, you cost us $80,000 a year. You, sir, $25,000, and that's decent. Oh, no. Well, I'm not talking about costs like that. I'm talking about an intangible. There are some intangible costs. The cost of our debt. When we borrow money, really, I always leave my markers somewhere way away from where I can get to them easily. But when we talk about debt, and I probably should bring up my calculator here right now so that I don't have to do arithmetic and disgrace myself in my head. Okay, so what does debt cost us? Well, the first thing is that in our world, in finance, we actually don't care about what debt did cost us. We need to know what the next debt is going to cost us. The marginal debt, the incremental debt, the future expected cost of debt. So I could have a company called TWTFTS. No, TWTFTS. And it has 5.75% 2028. And these are the last bonds that it issued, the junior subordinateds. Now, these would be the most expensive bonds. They are already down to the level where they're borrowing at almost a junk level. They've already lent out to senior, senior subordinated, and junior. So they are now in the junior subordinated. So we would first of all assume that this cost of debt is the minimum that the next cost of debt will run us. We assume that, again, that this is where the company is now. They've burned through their goodwill with senior and senior subordinate and junior. So now when they go out there, for these junior subordinates, they had to pay 5.75% coupon. That would be a starting point for what it would cost them to borrow the next time. The next cost of debt would be no better than that, because the investors are going to say, nah, yeah, you want more debt? It's even riskier than this debt was. But then we have to take into account, what is the market actually saying for the cost of this debt? Oh, the market is saying that let's say that the price of this debt right now, this junior subordinated, we look up the price of it, and it is right now trading at $987.50. Okay. That would mean Apps Finance TVM Solver, with 6 years left on the debt, with a price value of negative $987.50, payments that would be 0.0575 times 1,000, with a face value of 1,000, the yield to maturity on that debt is 6.00%. So the market is saying that the actual cost, if this company, TWTF, went out right now and borrowed more money, it would be at a rate of 6.00%. That is their current cost of debt. It's not 5.75%, it's 6%, 6.00%. That's what the market is saying. If this company went out and did 5.75%, it's not going to do any good. They're going to have to up that to 6% if they want to do a new issue of debt. That's what the investors are going to say. They're going to say, well, the markets say it's 6%, so we want a coupon of 6%. So in other words, when we're talking about the cost of debt, R sub D, we would say not 5.75%, we would say 6.00% is their current cost of debt. Okay. But that's not quite the end of it, because corporations get to deduct their interest. So we actually don't care about the cost of debt. We care about the after-tax cost of debt, which would be the cost of debt times 1 minus their tax rate. That's the cost, the component cost of capital called debt, would be the R sub D times 1 minus T. So in other words, they actually don't pay 6%. They pay 6% times 1 minus their tax rate. Now, currently, the tax rate for corporations is 21%. So the after-tax cost of debt to this company would be 6.00% times 1 minus 0.21. So their after-tax cost of debt, one of the big component costs of capital, is six percent times 1 minus 0.21. Enter. 4.74%. That's their after-tax cost of debt. Here's where we're going. The sources of capital, components, sources of capital. Now, I hate the terminology here, but one of them is debt. They can get money by issuing bonds. We've just found out what the cost of that is. There is also equity. And there are three flavors of equity. There's preferred stock. They could sell preferred stock or hold preferred stock. They could also have their common stock outstanding. And I got to talk about this for a minute. Which, and this is where it gets really, the terminology the book uses is a little bit dodgy, but it's better than nothing. We call this the cost of their retained earnings. In other words, the money that they actually make that survives to the bottom of the balance sheet and accumulates there. That is a source of capital. We can plow it back in, we can send it to the shareholders, but it is a source of capital. And finally, there's one other one. New issue common stock. They can actually go out and sell more stock to raise capital. Now, the designations, R-D-A-T, that's the after-tax cost of debt. The cost of preferred is R-P. This one is R-S. This is the cost of their existing shareholders. And I've said this several times in the course, accounting sees profit as a plus. We see it as a cost. You've earned money. The company has earned money. That belongs to the shareholders. And so the company has a cost of holding that for the shareholders. It's difficult to get this one through, especially when I was in consulting and I was explaining this to owners of companies who were not steeped in economics and finance. They couldn't understand why their profit was a cost. Well, we made that. Why are you calling it a cost? Because it's not yours. You are holding it. It's an opportunity cost. And then the new issue common stock, we designate that as an R sub N. Here's an odd thing. These are generally in order of how much what size they are. The cost of debt is the lowest, generally speaking. The cost of debt is the lowest for two reasons. One is because those investors are the safest. They've got a guaranteed payoff at the end. They get fixed coupons, and if the company goes belly up, they get first dibs. So the cost of debt is pretty low because of those assurances. And then when you say that debt, you can take the interest off your taxes, well, that makes it even cheaper. So there are two reasons debt is cheaper than equity in general. First of all, it is the safest for the investors, so they require the lowest return. And second, the interest is tax deductible. So that's the, both of those make it the cheapest. Now on that list, the next one is preferred stock, mainly because it's relatively safe, especially compared to normal stock. The preferred shareholders get a stated fixed dividend forever, and they get their dividend before any the common stockholders get anything. So preferred stock tends to be relatively cheap as far as cost goes. Common stock is expensive. Equity, the investors in common stock are all at risk. You throw your money in and you just hope to God something good happens with it. So they're going to, and the dividends aren't tax deductible. As a matter of fact, the bad thing is the dividends are double taxed, because the company pays tax and then it pays its dividends. And the other thing is that when the shareholders get those dividends, they pay tax on them. So, I mean, it's like, it's the opposite of what happens with debt. So that's why we see this R sub S, the cost of common stock, being quite expensive, comparatively speaking. And I'll give you some, for example, the cost of new stock is even worse, because if a company issues new common stock, let's say for $80 a share, it doesn't get $80. It goes on the books of as the company got $80, but the company got much less than that because the investment banking syndicate is going to take its scratch out of the deal. So the company starts in a hole. If it has to go to the capital markets and sell stock, that's going to be the most expensive source of capital the company could get. That's another reason why you should always ask yourself, why is this company selling stock, doing an IPO or a seasoned offering? If we know that new stock issue is the most expensive kind of stock, then we probably have to ask ourselves, why can't the company use one of these cheaper? Why can't it issue debt? Why can't it issue preferred stock? Why can't it reach into retained earnings? Why does it have to go out there and raise money by the most expensive method possible? I'll tell you a story about this a little later today, about the cost, how expensive new common stock can be. It's a story from my consulting days, and it actually intersects in a weird, minor way with a movie from maybe 10 years ago. But anyway, so what are we talking about as far as numbers? Okay, if I were to say, well, a company's debt is 4.74%, I'd probably see the preferred stock actually not being much different from that. In fact, I found examples where the cost of preferred stock was lower than the cost of debt. And that always makes me shake my head. Why won't companies issue preferred stock? It's actually got a pretty low cost. You know, worst case scenario, if the debt is at 4.74%, you might see the preferred at 5.25%. Common stock, retained earnings stock, can be as bad as 15 to 17%, the cost of it. And if 15 to 17% is the cost of the common, then the new is probably going to be 18.5 to 20.5%. So that kind of gives you a framework. When I keep saying costs, I'm talking about like interest rate cost, the cost of the opportunity cost of having these funds or of getting these funds. So that's where that all starts. Now, the cost of debt is easy. Find the yield to maturity, take it one times the tax rate of the company, and you've got your after-tax cost of debt. The other ones are a little bit more robust, shall we say. And to some extent, they almost get into something that's not even particularly science. But let me show you something. Why am I doing all of this? I'm doing all of this because the company is after this magical thing called WACC, the weighted average cost of capital. And I've mentioned this several times before in the course. The WACC is what a lot of companies use for their discount rate for new projects. The WACC is. Remember those net present value problems and all that kind of stuff? That's the interest rate they use, is that WACC. And there's actually, once you get to the WACC, it's a fairly straightforward formula. The WACC is nothing but the weight of debt times the after-tax cost of debt plus the weight in the capital structure of the preferred times the cost of preferred plus the weight of existing stock times the cost of existing stock plus the weight of new stock times the cost of new stock. That's the weighted average cost of capital. It's just a weighted average of the component costs. Now those weights, I'll talk about those on Wednesday a little more, but it's not horrible. You just add up the total values of the different components. And then, as a matter of fact, I can even show you really quickly here. Let me do that. Suppose that you have debt is $10 million market value. You should use market values, of course. And let's say preferred stock is $2 million. And their existing equity is $14 million market value. That'd be like the market cap. You look at the market cap for that number. Okay, and then you add those up and you get 12 and 14 is $26 million. Is that right? Yeah. And then the weight of each one would be, and this is market value, and then the weight of each one would be 10 million over 26 million, 2 million over 26 million, and then 14 million over 26 million. And those would add up to 1.00. That's how you get the weights. You just take each component's market value divided by the total market value of the company. And you notice that I didn't do new stock there. Probably I wouldn't if I'm looking at a company as it stands now. And in fact, realistically, even the preferred stock probably isn't going to be there in most companies these days. There might be some preferred stock from some time in the long past, but I was prowling through a couple of weeks ago looking for preferred stock, companies that had preferred stock, and I mean most companies don't even have preferred stock anymore. So, I mean, really it would boil down to two numbers there, mostly. Oh. So, anyway. Now, follow with me here. This isn't as bad as it looks. You're going to have to do the cost of preferred and the cost of stock by twisting around some old formulas that we have from the past. There was a formula for finding the price preferred stock. Remember, the price right now of preferred stock is the flat dividend over the market's current discount rate. We can market's discount rate on preferred. We did that. It's nothing hard. Well, I can turn that around and I can say that the cost of preferred right now is the dividend rate over its price right now. So that one's not too hard. Let me show you an example. Okay. BVL, 2% cumulative preferred try that again, preferred par value $50 per share, currently priced at $36.90. This is just how I would put it on an exam or a quiz. Okay, then the R, that's an R there, I'm sorry. The current cost of preferred stock, I can calculate, it'd be the dividend, which would be 0.02 times 50 divided by $36.90. So the current cost of preferred, and this is going to be, if this is kind of like a just a blur right now, don't sweat. I'm going to do this again on Wednesday. We're just going to do another one like it. So I would take 0.02 times 50, so that'd be the dividend they're paying in perpetuity, divided by the current price, $36.90. So the current price of the current return on the cost of preferred, I'm sorry, is 2.71%. So that would go into the formula right there, times the weight of preferred. That's all there'd be to it, nothing hard. Here is the one that can be a pain. So we've got how to do cost of debt, we've got to do how to do cost of preferred. Here's the one that can be a little bit dodgy. If it's an old company with a constant growth dividend, it's pretty easy to do it. Existing common. By the way, I think I forgot, I know I said it before, but I'll say it again. Another way to term for this is the cost of internally generated equity. What is the cost of the funds that we earn? That's what it is. How much is that costing us, those funds that we earn? Okay, if it's an old growth, constant growth, of dividends, we had a formula, the price is the dividend one period out divided by the R of the stock minus the growth rate, where D1 is D0 times 1 plus G. I showed you that last week. And again, we can turn the formula around and find the cost of the stock. If we know the dividends and know the growth rate and know the current price, I can algebraically rearrange this, I think, and I can say that the cost of the stock, the cost of existing common stock, the cost of internally generated equity, is going to be equal to next period's dividend divided by the price plus the growth rate of the company. So I can do one here. RLM just paid a $2.20 dividend that is expected to grow at a rate of 3.00% for the foreseeable future. RLM Common is currently priced at $26.42 per share. Now, for heaven's sakes, follow, just put the numbers in where I tell you. Just put the numbers in. There's your formula. So the cost of common is going to be D1, which is D0 times 1 plus the growth rate divided by the current price, which is $26.42, and then plus out here, like that. Just plug the numbers into the formula wherever you see them. Now, on the final exam, you'll get 2 6x4 note cards. It's probably a good idea to devote one of those note cards to these little formulas I'm doing here. Practice is going to be the best way to do it. We're going to do it again on Wednesday, and you got problems in your homework that do this too. But all you're going to do is I'm going to take D0, and I'm going to grow that one period times 1 plus 0.03, and then I'm going to divide that by the current price of the stock, $26.42. And then don't forget to add plus the growth rate on again. Cost of existing equity is 11.58%.
You don't have to put the 26 in parentheses, isn't it just going to add the 0.03
to the... No, the 0.03 is added after you've done that division. No, it understands that the division comes before the addition. Hierarchy of operations, 11.58%. Yeah, for God's sake, just add this on to the end. No parentheses. 11.58%. Okay. Much more expensive. Before I go on, first of all, this would be only for older companies where you've got constant growth dividends, you know the dividends and all that kind of stuff. It would not be for a couple of realistic problems, and I'll talk about those in a minute. But this formula is actually kind of hiding in all of those, in the other ways we do this. Notice something, that the cost of common stock goes up as the stock price falls. I mentioned this earlier in the semester, is there were consulting gigs where we'd have a director's meeting, I'd say the stock price is falling, and they didn't seem to be bothered by that. Well, so, you know, they'll just have to live with the price going down until we get things going. But you notice here that the cost of equity is always intimately tied to the market. If the price of the stock is going down, then internally the company's cost of equity is rising. It's sort of like, I've explained it, it's like a low-level fever. You really don't notice it until much later if the fever just keeps going and going. It's there. The price going down is causing the cost of equity going up. You don't feel it immediately, but as time goes on, it's affecting your weighted average cost of capital. It's driving your decision making. More projects will be rejected because that R sub S is going up. So your WACC is going up, so your NPVs are going down. It's not immediately obvious to a company and all that. But the real problem is that if a company doesn't have constant growth dividends, if it doesn't have dividends or something like that, then the company, then we have to find another way to get the R sub S. There are a couple of ways out there. What if we don't have constant growth dividends? What happens if we don't even have a dividend? One method is to just use the capital asset pricing model. We can say that the expected return to the stock is going to be the current risk-free rate plus the beta of the stock times expected return to the market portfolio minus the risk-free rate. We can get a pretty good estimate of the cost of existing common using CAPM. Couple of problems with that. Well, obviously, you're going to have to get the risk-free rate from the yield tables of the Treasury. You'll have to get the beta sub S of the company, and you'll have to get some kind of an expected return to the market from one of the services that does that. But it's doable. I mean, suppose that the expected return to the market portfolio right now is 10.4%. The risk-free rate right now is 4.5%, and the company's beta, the beta of the stock, is 1.15. We can get an estimate. It would be the expected return to the market portfolio is 4.5% plus 1.5 times 10.4% minus 4.5%, and we can get a shot. We've got an expected cost of the equity doing that. What would that be? 4.5%, 4.5, plus the beta of the stock, 1.15, times the expected return to the market portfolio, 10.4, minus 4.5. Close the parentheses, see what that tells us. 11.29%. would be an estimate. So you can use CAPM. Now, the only stops on CAPM are getting your expected return to the market portfolio. Like I said, you go to one of those services, see what the big wigs or big thinkers are thinking it is, get the risk-free rate, and get the beta of the stock. What happens if the stock doesn't have a beta? It's too young, or it's a private company? Okay, one thing you can do, and I don't know if I said this or not. You could find companies that do have betas that are similar to this company, you know, like in the same SIC code range or something like that, and get the average of their betas. That's done. I've done that before. I had a private company. It was in the apparel industry. It was relatively, it wasn't small, so I figured I'd get the betas of some other apparel companies that were publicly traded and had betas, and I just took an average of them, and that gave me a beta that I could use for the CAPM for this private company. You know, am I right or wrong? Well, if the other company's betas are solid, and this company is a lot like them, yeah, so I could use the CAPM. But there's another way, interestingly enough, that seems to be more popular out there than this. It's called the bond yield plus equity premium. Here's how it works. Suppose that I don't have a beta, and I really don't think this company is enough like other companies that I could use them as comparables. What I could do is go out and say, okay, let's look at companies that are somewhat similar. Don't have to be really similar, but they're in the same kind of position as far as their debt goes and all of that. And I find that the average bond yield on these comparables is, let's say, 5.80%. Then I go back to those same companies, and I say, what is their average cost of equity? And I can calculate those, and suppose that right now, their average cost of equity is 11.20%. Remember, these are comparables. What I could say, that means that if I say that equity is, the cost of equity is the cost of debt after taxes plus some equity premium. In other words, the extra that is required to take the risk of stock instead of bonds. So if I, that means that overall in this industry, 11.0% is 5.80% times 1 minus the marginal tax rate of 21% plus the equity premium. I could turn that around and say the equity premium must be 11.20 times 1 minus the 0.21 minus, I screwed that up. No, I did that wrong. 11.21 minus the 5.80 times 1 minus 0.21. So in other words, the market is saying whatever the cost of debt is to the company, overall the average is that the equity will cost 6.618% more. Let me say that again. What I've done here is I've said that overall, equity premium seems to be running about 6.618% more than the after-tax cost of debt. Okay, so suppose this company has an R sub D of 6.10%. that would mean that its cost of equity would be ...6.10% plus that equity premium, which was 6.618%. Which would mean that this company's cost would be 12.718%. Again, I'll do this again on Wednesday. It's, like I said, it might be something of a blur right now. I'm just walking through the logic. This is actually a very popular way for companies where you don't have the easy way to get the cost of equity. This can do it for you. There's one more here. Get that out of the way. And I'm going to go back to the original way to calculate the cost of equity, which was used turning around the constant growth formula. Remember that one? Now we're going to do new common stock. New equity. But anyway, we got this one. Now, I wrote this down. The cost is equal to D1 over R over P0 plus the growth rate. That was existing common. What we can do to get new common is just a little twist on this one. When a company sells new stock, it doesn't get the price. It gets the price minus the markets, minus the investment bankers' float. In other words, the company stock sells at $50, but if the float, $2.20, and what did I have for the dividend for that? It was growth, 3%. Okay, so, and the price, let's say the price was $28.10. So the cost of the existing equity would be $2.20 times 1 plus 0.03 over $28.10 plus 0.03. That would be the cost of existing common stock. Let me run that. I'm not sure I used the same numbers I did last time. So it'd be $2.20 times 1.03 divided by the price, 28.10, plus the growth rate of 0.03, 11.06%. That's the cost of their existing stock. Now, suppose the float is, let's say, $2.50 per share. In other words, the investment bankers, they'll sell the stock for $28.10, and then they'll keep $2.50 for themselves. So all you do for this one is take the same top, $2.20 times 1 plus 0.03, divided in this case by $28.10 minus the float of $2.50. Now that can also be given to you as a percent of the price, like 5%, 10% of the float of the current price. But if I do that, $2.20 times 1.03, this time divided by $28.10 minus $2.50, close parentheses, plus the 0.03, 11.85%. As you can see, the cost of new debt, of new equity, is higher than the cost of existing equity because of that float that came out of it. Now I'll tell you a story about this. The float is always going to be there when you issue common equity. There really isn't a float with preferred or with new issue preferred or new issue debt. It just isn't so minimal we don't talk about it. However, out there in the world of raising capital, you can have floats that are just beyond belief. How much the rainmakers take, and that's what we called ourselves, rainmakers. Long ago, there was a place down, I was told to meet my money people. They had a deal that they were working on down in Atlanta. So we met down there at the airport, and I thought we were going to go someplace else. We didn't. We rented a car at the airport, and we drove to this insanely huge back lot. This was back before 9/11, back in that time. And so we were just driving around until we found all of these big trailers where people, companies were operating out of. And there was one there that was kind of in a side place. And we went in, and there was an old guy in there, and he had an idea. He had a dream, or he had all this FAA documentation stacked everywhere. He wanted to take and lease planes that had been decommissioned by Lufthansa and take out all the seats and turn them into carriers for UPS, DHL, and the post office. That back then, that wasn't something that was done. And he wanted to do this. He had all the plans in place, and what he needed was $5 million to get it going. So we went into his place. He talked, we talked, he had cigars, and he and I got to know each other because we were both airplane buffs. And then, well, he said, is this possible? And the two money people, young men, said, sure, we're going to get the money together. It'll take us about 7 days to get $7.5 million. And he said, no, wait a minute. I said, five. Yeah, five for you, 2.5 for us. Oh, he just blew up. He hit the roof. Get out. Get the. And so we just politely thanked him, and we walked away. And of course, the one, the younger of the two, slowed down, make sure that he could, that guy could catch him, while we walked out to the car, which we deliberately parked quite a ways away, and we just stood there looking at our big old cell phones and looking at our watches while Dan went back and talked to him. The guy was yelling, no, stop, please, wait. And after a while, Dan comes up to us and he said, we got him. $6.75 million. And of course, the other boy, Jeff, just acted like he was having a fit, slammed his fist down on the hood of the car, and then finally we threw up our hands and just said, go on back, tell him okay. It was all a game. So you understand that he was going to have on his books $6.5 million, and he was going to get only $5 million. His cost of equity capital was going to be insane because that bottom there was going to have the value minus $2.5 million. I'll tell you the end of this story next week, or on Wednesday. It has a rather odd ending. That's all I have for you. I thank you.